If Washington wants to get right with voters, it has to start listening to them.
Welcome to Beyond the Bubble. I'm Kristen Roberts, Washington editor for the 30 news organizations all around America that together make McClatchy. This week, we're going to be talking about the very obvious shift in sentiment around guns after the Parkland shooting and how it is failing to move the needle on policy. By my side this week is another Alex, because Rorty is on vacation. Alex Dougherty is a reporter for the Miami Herald covering politics here in D.C. Welcome back to our show.
Appreciate being here.
So who have you brought with you to talk with us about gun policy after the Parkland shooting?
I have David Smiley with me, politics extraordinaire at the Miami Herald.
Awesome. You ready to do this?
Let's do it.
January 20th. The day the people became the rulers of this nation again.
And our ideals and fundamental values are being attacked. Do we retreat or do we fight? I say we fight.
He heard those voices that were out there that other people weren't hearing, and he just earned a mandate.
It is time for Democrats to grow a backbone and get out there and fight.
The American people would like to try something new. We would like to see the country go in a different direction to change the course for America.
He doesn't take this presidency seriously enough.
So to all Americans, hear these words. You will never be ignored again.
Mr. Smiley, welcome to our show.
Glad to be here.
So you have been down in Florida for the entire period of time in which we have been talking about gun control policy, both in Florida and in the nation, as we've been listening to the various statements coming out of the White House, as we've been listening to Donald Trump encourage lawmakers to not be afraid of the NRA, and then as we've seen the White House officials try to roll back Donald Trump's various statements on gun control policy. The polling seems pretty clear, at least at the national level. After the Parkland shooting, roughly 2 in 3 Americans now say gun control laws should be made more strict. What's the polling tell you about the state of sentiment in Florida, David?
In Florida, it's pretty similar. A Quinnipiac poll came out last week showing somewhat remarkably in the gunshine state that nearly 2/3 of voters in Florida support a nationwide ban on assault weapons. Despite the state legislature's move to arm school faculty, a majority of Floridian voters also oppose arming teachers.
So the state legislature is dealing with this presently. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that is being debated as we sit here and record this podcast. What's going to come out of the state legislature, David?
Well, the Florida Senate yesterday passed their version of the guns bill, which includes a red flag law that allows law enforcement and mental health care professionals to petition a court to revoke guns from people suspected of having mental health issues who may be dangerous if armed. The proposal also includes a watered-down version of the legislation to arm school faculty. Governor Rick Scott has said he does not support arming teachers. That's something that the House and Senate had proposed together. Yesterday, we saw a Miami senator, Rene Garcia, propose an amendment that passed that would stop the legislature from allowing full-time teachers to carry weapons on campus. It would only be available to librarians, janitors, and teachers who are not full-time teaching students in the classroom. We'll see what the House of Representatives does today. They will have the bill in their hands in their chamber. They are the more conservative wing of the state legislature. And Richard Corcoran, who is possibly running for governor, it'll be interesting to watch and see what he does with the bill and whether they adopt the Senate amendments, whether they send it back to the Senate to decide, you know, any modifications to match the House, and then send it on to Rick Scott, who, again, may be running for U.S. Senate against Bill Nelson. This puts everybody in an interesting situation in an election year where Republican voters are going to have their eye on who has done what with gun laws.
Alex, jump in here and tell me where Marco Rubio has been, because it really feels like he's been all over the map.
I absolutely believe that in this country, if you are 18 years of age, you should not be able to buy a rifle, and I will support a law that takes that right away.
He has, and he obviously made a big point in the immediate aftermath of the shooting to be one of the few Republican politicians who is willing to take the kind of emotion of these students and parents head on and meet with them in person and in a public sphere in a televised town hall. And at that town hall, Senator Rubio made one significant policy change, which was he supported raising the age to legally purchase a firearm from 21 up from 18. Currently, you have to be 21 years old to buy a handgun, but you do not have to be 21 to buy a rifle. Nicholas Cruz, the shooter in Parkland, legally purchased an AR-15 when he turned 18 years old. And if Senator Rubio were to support this, he would not have been able to do that. Since then, his tone has changed a bit. His tone, now that he's back in Washington facing the reality of a Republican-controlled Senate and House, has really talked about the need to get something done, and that something does not include what he brought up himself at the CNN town hall. These bills deal more narrowly with safety in schools and reporting those folks who may be predisposed to violent tendencies, making sure that they don't fall through the cracks of the school system and other institutions, notably the FBI in this case, that failed to recognize what were tons of red flags that weren't just available publicly, but people actually came to various agencies throughout South Florida to report Nicholas Cruz as a potential danger to society. So he's dealing with those issues, but not so much dealing with the access to guns for millions, which is a shift. And he acknowledges, and his argument is like, look, we can't pass this right now. Let's pass what we can pass, and we'll take care of this later, which I think for a lot of folks involved in this tragedy is not what they want to be hearing.
So talking about shifting, let's listen here to President Trump, who was sitting with Democrats and Republicans in February, right at the end of the month, talking about gun control policy.
You talked about the bump stock issue that Senator Feinstein, I know, cares passionately about.
And I'm going to write that out, but let's because get we started. Can do that with an executive order. I'm going to write the bump stock, essentially write it out. So you won't have to worry about bump stock. Shortly, that'll be gone.
David, talk to me about how people in Florida are reacting to the shifts they're seeing among Republicans in Washington, and especially by Rubio. I mean, Alex mentioned that CNN town hall. It was really an extraordinary moment when he said, I hear you, and I'm starting to reconsider my own position on some of these issues. And then we see in the subsequent days that he's not really reconsidering his position. He is very much where he's been all along. How is that playing at home, David?
I think unless Rubio is willing to go all the way and tell the families in Parkland that he's going to be on board with them, banning assault rifles, and adopting a number of gun control measures, he's just not going to win with them. And that's not going to happen. So I think, you know, the community there is largely opposed to Marco Rubio, and there's not much he can do to move to their side short of becoming a Democrat. That's just not going to happen.
Alex, talk to me about Rick Scott and how he would have to play this if he wants to really challenge for the Senate seat.
Well, the one thing that Rick Scott doesn't have or doesn't appear to have at this point is a contested primary. So he's not going to have to worry about making sure that the NRA members, most of whom are Republicans and identify with the Republican Party, will get behind him if he is seen as, you know, adopting any gun bill that comes out of the Florida legislature this week. So he does have that advantage going for him. What he doesn't have is he hasn't, in contrast to Rubio, he's really stayed away from the public eye in the sense of he has met with Parkland students and families, has not done it in a public forum, has not continued kind of his image as a in this post-shooting world as someone who represents this issue, because I think he realizes that this is an issue where there's going to be difference between him and Bill Nelson, and as much as he can keep the emotion out of it, it probably benefits him more because there are a lot of folks in deep blue Broward County who support stricter gun control measures. There are a lot of folks in ruby red panhandle of northern Florida who don't. And by making that comparison on a policy level, like, look, I want to keep your Second Amendment rights versus the more emotional debate that's happening in Broward County right now is probably one that makes political sense for him to avoid as much as possible.
I mean, one of the most extraordinary things to have come out in the last few weeks is the activism of the families who were affected, led by the teenagers from that school. And that has really contributed to the shift that we're seeing in sentiment among voters, both in Florida and nationwide. But as we talk to Republicans here in Washington and outside of D.C., back in their districts, about why that sentiment isn't moving the needle on policy, what we hear over and over again from the operative class is that, you know, they don't feel like they're under any pressure because the NRA provides the ground game support in elections. They mobilize voters in a way that Democrats and the gun control groups have never been able to do. Do you, either of you, see any evidence that in the state of Florida, this surge in rhetoric around gun control that is being led by the Parkland families is actually going to have an effect on the 2018 election cycle?
I think we're seeing that it will have an effect on the election cycle in Florida specifically. So the middle ground is not a great place to be on guns. Politics has shown that over and over. However, in the Florida Senate yesterday, we saw several Democrats vote in favor of the gun bills passing through the state, acknowledging that they were not particularly comfortable with some aspects of the bill, but they wanted to see something get done. And you saw politicians shifting their positions and being willing to compromise, which is fairly unusual, I think, in terms of gun legislation, in order to try and pass something. And so we'll see if Rick Scott and the Florida House are willing to compromise, for instance, on whether counties in Florida will have the option to allow their school faculty to be armed or not. The Senate wants the option to be in the county's hands. The House wants it to be mandatory. If there's a compromise there, you know, I think you're going to see more evidence that people are willing to give a little bit on the issue. And regardless of whether they compromise or not, heading into the election, whether anything passes, whether it doesn't, this is definitely going to be a front and center political issue for Bill Nelson and Rick Scott if he runs, for whoever's running for governor, whether Democrat or Republican, to have to address what they did, what they said, and where they stand on the issues.
Let's take a second to listen to the words of Emma Gonzalez. She's an 18-year-old who was speaking after the shooting at an anti-gun rally in Fort Lauderdale.
Politicians who sit in their gilded House and Senate seats funded by the NRA telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS.
So I think the campaign effect, I think March 24th, which is the date of the March for Our Lives, both in Washington and at this point now dozens of marches around the country, will be a crucial measuring stick for the movement and whether they can sustain the rhetoric and momentum that has built over the past month through November. And I think it'll be really interesting to see if any Republicans jump on that mantle. You know, someone like a Carlos Corbello in South Florida, for example, who's been very vocal about banning bump stocks after the Las Vegas shooting and has continued to be so after the Parkland shooting. So I think if you are able to see that momentum keep building, and not just in Washington, not just in South Florida, but in, you know, marches that are in places like Fort Worth, Texas, or in Phoenix, Arizona, places where Republicans still have control. If there's that grassroots sentiment there, that can be the way, especially in a year where we're likely to see some Republicans turn on their 2016 vote based off a whole other host of issues. That's where we may see some movement, I think, if these kids are able to sustain that conversation for the next 6 months.
David, how many Florida students do you expect will be coming up to Washington for that march?
Not clear right now. The organizers of the march are being tight with the details of how they're spending their money, how they're getting students up to D.C. It looks like they have about $5 million at their disposal. They've created a 501c4, which in political parlance, a dark money nonprofit that will allow them to spend money not only on the march, but also afterward. I do expect there to be a large presence. They were applying for 500,000 people on the mall with the National Park Service. However, they've been bumped from the mall due to a student filming project. So unless they are able to work something out with that group, it appears they will be closing streets in D.C., I think Pennsylvania, in order to hold their march. So there's a lot of optimism that they'll have 500,000 or more. But, you know, South Florida students specifically, not clear right now how many are coming up.
So right after the Parkland shooting, we saw the Florida legislature face the wrath of dozens of students who came up to Tallahassee the week after the shooting. And they were excited and hoping to see debate on a gun bill. Turns out they ended up seeing a debate on something very different.
David, what is the bill that they were actually talking about instead of talking about guns?
If you want an example of how difficult it is to move gun policy in Florida, this is a great example. On the Tuesday back after the shooting, with students from Stoneman Douglas in the chambers in the gallery in the Florida House, the Florida minority party, the Democrats, pushed for a procedural vote to bring an assault weapons ban onto the floor for debate.
While this is an extraordinary procedural move, the shooting in Parkland demands extraordinary action.
Legislation had been stuck in committee, and that was shot down overwhelmingly along party lines. And instead, the Florida House took up a bill to discuss whether pornography is a public health crisis.
We need to begin discussing, investigating, researching, talking about the impacts of pornography on our state.
And, you know, I think that was a rude awakening for the students from Parkland as to how politics works and how difficult a job they had ahead of them.
The next death of someone with an assault rifle here in Florida is going to be on them. It's going to be on
them. So I think there are a couple elections coming up in the next few weeks where we might get a feel for whether the gun debate is going to move the needle among Republican voters. If we look at the special election coming up in Pennsylvania, if we look at some of the early primary states where Republicans who represent suburban voters are being challenged, we might get a better understanding for what November might look like or what the later primaries might look like in the state of Florida. If we do see a surge in activism among suburban voters, or if we do get those kind of center-right Republicans saying, God, I am really out of step with a party that can't ban bump stocks, then, you know, it might be a different kind of November than I think a lot of people are thinking right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think, again, you look at Miami, Carlos Corbello's district, which is most of suburban Miami-Dade County, as well as the Florida Keys, is a great example of just that, a Republican who is likely looking at his district, looking at his voters, and looking at folks within his own party and saying, let's take a moment to really think about where we are on this issue, because if we are not on the right side of this issue, and that doesn't mean an assault weapons ban. That means things like, let's pass a bump stock ban. It doesn't matter whether I say we should do it and 40 other Republicans say we should do it. If we don't do it by November, folks like me, folks in suburban Dallas, folks in suburban Philadelphia are going to be in trouble, and we may not have a Republican majority because of this issue.
All right, guys, let's shift gears and let's go to the lightning round, where each one of you gets to identify a politician or a candidate making some move relevant to the 2018 election in November. And up first, David Smiley.
I'm going off the board. I know this is a D.C. show, but since we are talking about guns in Florida, I'm going with House Speaker Richard Corcoran. The guns bill is in his chamber's hands today, and he has the power to adopt the legislation to match some changes made by the Florida Senate, or he can stick to his guns, to use a bad pun.
Dude, that was really bad. Go ahead. Keep going.
Richard Corcoran can continue to take a hard line on some positions regarding guns in schools, arming teachers. He has an issue of a waiting period in Florida. Right now, you have to wait 3 days to get a handgun, but not a rifle. Will he adopt these things? He has the agricultural commissioner running for governor who has already gone full NRA and moved to his right. Will he try to match him, or will he be more centrist in a state where Second Amendment voters are very powerful? And why Richard Corcoran remains really important is what he does will also influence what Governor Rick Scott does, who may be running against Bill Nelson for Florida Senate. So I think all eyes will be on Richard Corcoran today.
I'm also going outside of D.C. with Miami-Dade school superintendent Alberto Carvalho, who last week quite memorably thumbed his nose at New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and chose to stay in Miami when he was offered the top education job in New York City.
Have you ever lived in New York City? It is really cold there.
It is very cold. I like the snow, but he definitely apparently did not. So after a three-hour drama-filled only in Miami telenovela-style school board meeting, Carvalho made his decision. And what's interesting, though, politically is he has been talked about as a congressional candidate in Miami. He had been talked about as a congressional candidate for Ileana Ross-Lehtinen's seat as a Republican, Democrat, or independent. He's that popular in Miami-Dade County. And he is a registered independent who, by all accounts, is likely not to run in 2018, but may run for Miami-Dade County Mayor in 2020. And this kind of spectacle will make it nearly impossible to get an education job outside of the state of Florida, but may make it very possible to make inroads for a potential 2020 run.
Jim DeFede went on to Twitter after that, as you put it, telenovela, and said that this was the day that his campaign starts.
I agree.
He's probably absolutely right. I am going to do the opposite of you guys. I'm going to go with a D.C. person, and I'm going with Trey Gowdy. And the reason I'm going with Trey Gowdy is because he has now called a hearing to look into the failures of the FBI around the Parkland shooting. Now, he's not running again. But what he does is creates a window of opportunity for Republicans to continue to argue that it's not about guns. It's about the failure of law enforcement. So how he operates and the things that he says in that committee could have a big impact on Republicans in Florida. That's it for us. David Smiley, thank you so much for being with us. And I really appreciate your insight from the ground.
You got to come back soon.
All right, man. Thank you very much, Alex Dougherty, for sitting right next to me and pretending to be Alex Rorty.
It's been a pleasure, and I hope to come back very soon.
Thank you to producer Jordan Marie Smith, and thank you to our listeners. We want to hear from you, so please send your questions and your comments to btb@mcclatchy.com and connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/BeyondTheBubblePod. Tell us what you're seeing in your battleground state, and we might even ask you to call into the show. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you use. And thanks to all of you who have left us a rating or a review. Talk to you next week.